It is Saturday, October 2nd, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, well, we're asking for you to participate in helping out the station. And to help you do so, Sandra and Andrew Faber have done a donating grant of $500. That means the first $500 of KUSP is donated today will be doubled by Sandra and Andrew Faber. And we appreciate your contribution.
That we do.
Terry Green's here today to help us out, asking you and telling you how the station is run and, of course, how you can help participate in making the station.
Before
functional.
I do that, I would like to do some thank yous to people who called in the last few minutes of Ask Dr. Don, just handed me. So I would like to thank Quinn of Fort Irwin for making a pledge, Barry from Monterey, June from Carmel, Susan and Jeffrey in Santa Cruz, and an anonymous new KUSP member in Aptos. All of those calls and web pledges coming in just the last couple of minutes to push us towards our goal for Ask Dr. Don. Now we need to get on with the goal for Geek Speak, and the Fabers can help us do that.
That's right. So go ahead and give us a call at 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. Decide how much you'd like to give, and then it only takes a couple minutes to give it, to donate. Thank you. Today on Geek Speak, Al Luckow is here. Al Luckow is a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Hello, everybody.
And welcome to Geek Speak. We bridge the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. We've been doing it for about 10 years, and we're going to keep doing it. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Now, Al, as I recall, you recently got a new appliance in your home.
Yes, the new Apple TV has just come out, and I talked to a few people who've ordered it, and they're like, well, mine's not supposed to come for 2 weeks, they said, the shipping. Well, that's because when Steve Jobs was in the keynote announcing it, I had the keynote up on one screen. The other screen, I had the Apple page up, constantly reloading to see when they were going to put it up for sale. So
you were ready.
I basically ordered this thing the second that it became available, and I ended up getting it like 2 days ago. And it's a little box for those of you out there who don't know what the Apple TV is. The Apple TV has come out already. It's a large device, but they've improved everything. So now the thing is this little square. It's like a 4-inch by 4-inch square. And it connects to your TV or your system. And basically what it does, has no storage. It connects to your network. It connects to Netflix, YouTube, all those different kinds of things. It connects to your computer. It lets you play all the stuff that's on your computer, anything that you have in iTunes, and it runs it straight into your HDTV. You can control the thing with the remote that it comes with or from your iPhone or your iPad. The thing is, it's literally amazing. It's very inexpensive. And the cool thing about it, and, you know, I do have this thing, and I have tried it. The cool thing about it is I found there's a website called treehugger.com.
Of course.
Yeah. And in their science and technology, they have a section on green devices. And they reference this other company, this other website, iFixit. And how iFixit, their premise is if you can't open it, you don't own it. So
yeah, that's right. Definitely.
So basically they have taken the thing apart and they say this thing for repairability, they give it a score of 8 out of 10.
Really?
So yeah, so it's really repairable. The watts on it only uses at maximum when it's running flat out 5.95 watts, and only 1 watt on standby. So it's a very green device. It's repairable. It's inexpensive. It's small, so it's got a low footprint. I mean, when you think about, you know, a DVD player can suck up like 180 watts, a TiVo like 38 watts. You know, your TV, which could be like 200 watts. You know, this thing is like, you know, 1 watt or 5 watts. So it's an amazing little device. I navigated it. I went stuff. I watched, you know, I connected my Netflix thing.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool little gadget. I mean, for the price, it's, I know Google also has a Google TV coming out too, which is also going to be a similar type of thing. So that's going to be something to watch for, I think, this probably before Christmas. So it's going to be another device that's in the same category as the thing that Apple came out with. But I can tell you, I bought the Apple one. And tell the truth, I'll probably buy the Google one too.
Really?
Because I designed these interfaces for these things. So
for large screen TVs
sort of,
and such.
Yeah, so I sort of have to buy them to see how they work and all that kind of stuff. But so far, the first one I got here, Apple TV, just amazing. Just
I'm doing a lot of media installation work with HD content up at UCSC for the lab that we have. It's a large theatrical lab kind of space. And I'm dealing with connecting, you know, HD projectors, 1080p projector with different formats of input, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's a constant struggle of, well, I want to use an HDMI cable because the HDMI table is too long, so I'm going to go down to a different format. But then you've got HDCP protocol, which is the security aspect, or the encryption protocol, if you will, to make it so you can't copy digital 1080p content.
Is there a limit on the HDMI cable length?
There are, and I don't recall off the top of my head. But they do have, I found a box that's, I mean, it's way too expensive. Uh-huh. It's like $1,000 for the whole kit, which allows you to do HDMI over Cat 5, and it does, which is Ethernet cable, if you will. And you can run it up to 300 feet.
Wow.
So that's enough distance for me. But yeah. this whole complexity of going with HD, it is, there's a lot to learn. And mm-hmm. as everyone set up their TVs, they start figuring that out. And of course, lots of people are running the lower quality signals because the complication is too high.
You mean like 720p? Is that what you're considering lower quality?
Yeah.
So the two HD resolutions,
720 and 1080. Yeah.
1080. And actually, broadcast does it really do?
You know, I think Terry would know that. Terry, broadcast?
Over the air TV is predominantly either 720p or 1080, or it's 1080i. And I think from what I've been seeing in this area, it's divided up about 50-50 among the broadcasters in HD. About half are at 720 and the other half are at 1080.
Mm-hmm. And the 1080i is interlaced, so this
right.
is sort of like...
There is no 1080p over-the-air standard.
Right. You'd have to have like a Blu-ray player or something.
Right, and so that's what I was setting up with Blu-ray, is trying to get the best quality out of that. So anyway, it's interesting that the complication that everyone's experienced, the Apple TV kind of tries to simplify that, right? It basically just has an HDMI cable on it.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Right.
And, you know, it's going along with the premise, which a lot of people are starting to realize, that the whole idea of media, of DVDs or Blu-rays or what have you, is going to go away. It's almost like you're looking like the floppy.
Well,
you know?
That's what we were talking about last night about this, is that, you know, the Blu-rays back... I don't own any Blu-rays. Do you own any Blu-ray? And it's one of those questions where... Definitely people bought in. There's that whole fiasco with HD DVDs and Blu-ray where it took a long time to choose one. Finally, Blu-ray won.
Right.
But now it's kind of like, well, you're getting your content online. There's televisions available at 480 at least online and more. And, of course, different services like iTunes selling movies or renting movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then Netflix as well. Pretty soon the disc is just not as important.
I mean, people aren't going to want stuff laying around.
Yeah.
And that's what this is. I think the games consoles are always going to, it's a handy way for them to distribute games, you know, because you can make these solid things that have cool covers and stuff. And I really miss the album. I mean, personally, I miss big vinyl album covers.
Of course.
That was, but the thing is, you know, it's just from a material standpoint, from a green standpoint.
Why print it and ship it?
People are just realizing, you know what, we can just have this one digital file that people download. We avoid all this other cost, all these other materials, save all this paper, all this manufacturing, all this junk that, you know, ends up in some, you know, swirling pool of plastic in the middle of the ocean anyway. You know, we can stop all that just by this digital thing. So I think just the fact of a Blu-ray disc is I mean, we're going to be, you know, 10 years from now, we're going to be laughing about this.
Yeah.
You know,
and you mentioned games. I subscribe to a service for games, not that I play much anymore, but that the games are registered up on this service. I create their application. I see all the games that I own that are registered with them. I say, I want to play this. It downloads it to my computer, and I play it. And later, I might go on a different computer, and all my save settings are kept. Like, that ability to just make it not location-based, not a physical object, but it's more of a service for the games. That's how I play Portal, for example. And my son does shares the account with me. Anyway, that's that ability to make it less physical and less shipping and less trucks.
Yeah.
Good things.
I mean, it's all rotating around the idea of bandwidth. I mean, when you have the amount of bandwidth in your home that can handle this kind of stuff, the whole world opens up.
Definitely.
So that's...
So speaking of games, I wanted to mention Minecraft, which is... I'll read the bit of Wikipedia entry because it's hard to explain, but I think they do a pretty good job. Minecraft is a sandbox game which allows players to build constructions out of textured cubes in the 3D world. So you run around this kind of 3D space. All the space is made up of 3-meter cubes, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And you pick them up and change them, delete them, and... So kind of imagine the Dig Dig game. Do you remember the Dig Dig game? You're kind of digging around. Do you remember that game?
No,
okay. Anyway, so you're in a 3D world, and you're able to remove objects and move objects around, and you can play it in two different fashions. One is this highly creative, single or multiplayer, highly creative game, which you're just creating things. And the other, a world exists where there's villains and things, and they kind of represent a cube as well. So you might run into a troll, and the troll's going to chase you down. And you might have a flock of sheep that you manage. So you got to make sure that they're safe from the troll, but you're going to collect their wool to make money.
So there's like characters in this world, too, not just structures that you're building. building, but they're like roaming strange beings.
Yes, yes, okay. in this one mode. Uh-huh. So this place, you can kind of think of it as like a 3D construction tool, right? Mm-hmm. Because, of course, you can go ahead and build as much as you want. So this guy went ahead and built the Star Trek Enterprise in the correct scale, if you will.
One to one.
He had a little bit of a problem in that your character types a certain height, and so he had to make the floors high enough where you could walk around it. Mm-hmm. So then he makes this 3D, and it must have taken him forever to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge thing. He's walking around in the video we have up on the website. He's walking around and viewing this thing from all different angles, and it looks like an impressive endeavor. And also, if you recall, in some of the Star Trek movies, you kind of fly by ships being made, and they're kind of mm-hmm. in space. Right. And it looks like that. It's kind of the skeleton's there, but the rest of it's not. And what he's going to do is he's going to go ahead and put this on a server when the Minecraft servers are up and running healthy again. He's going to put it on, allow people to join, and construct. So wow. He's basically making a construction party.
Sort of a community. I know I went and watched that
video.
Yeah,
it's cool.
And what's neat about the 3D rendering is, I mean, it's a little bit on the blocky side, but
it's way blocky. It
also does feel real, and it shows him walking up to the Enterprise, and as he's underneath it, and the Enterprise is sort of floating, he looks up, and you can see atmospheric perspective.
Yeah.
So the further away pieces of the Enterprise is just a little bit hazy because they're so far. They're literally, I mean, it's one-to-one.
Right, right.
I mean, he's looking at it like as if he's really there.
And the one thing he did is he's really interested in being in the inside of it, being able to walk around. Mm-hmm. And so he hasn't done the nacelle cells. Those are the warp drives, if you mm-hmm. will, because you can't actually walk around them. You can. There's Jeffrey tubes in them. But mm-hmm. in general, that's not part of the livable space in the ship.
Yeah.
So he's left those off. And I know the first time he gets people in there, in fact, I should look at the story today because this was like yesterday that that I saw it. I'm sure that people are going to add those. Like the ability to create new worlds because it's becoming easy, three-dimensional, mm-hmm. I mean, right. You know, virtual, mm-hmm. It's going to take off in some sense. It's pretty neat to see.
It's a neat idea because all these people are going to contribute. You know, so you can say, well, I built, you know, the medical area, or I worked on the bridge, or I did these different parts of this. And you could actually have people go there just to go visit the Enterprise, and you can just walk around in it and just explore, or, you know, maybe contribute yourself.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah.
All right, so we're gonna keep talking about space. In just a minute, Al, you're going to tell us about space on the cheap?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty cool. In just a minute, Al's going to talk about that. But first, I want to mention that Sandra and Andrew Faber have donated $500 to GeekSpeak, and that will entice you to call and donate. So if you donate right now to the station during the GeekSpeak hour, as soon as you possibly can, please, your money is duplicated or doubled dollar for dollar. And Terry Green, station manager, thank you so much for being here to help.
I'm just thrilled at the idea of like a starship barn raising.
Yeah, that's what it's like, huh?
Yeah,
that's really cool. I kind of want to see this being more, less than creating more fiction, of course, mm-hmm. but somehow do new construction
right.
projects with it, planning and things.
Right.
Like town planning and things like that. Very cool. You know, people that listen to KOSP tend to be really independent thinkers. I think that's definitely true with GeekSpeak. The people that I know that listen to GeekSpeak are people that are always looking for new, interesting information about the world. They're kind of continual learners. And you listening to GeekSpeak probably means you're a continual learner. You understand that the reason we do the show, of course, is for fun and humor and information. But it really is that it's that drive to kind of get a bigger picture about the world that public radio helps with.
It's really, I think, the underlying idea behind what public radio has evolved into. In every kind of context, whether you look at the national and international services that were motivated by people who weren't satisfied, the existence of those were motivated by people who weren't satisfied with the conventional media at the time. There wasn't enough coverage. It wasn't in depth. It wasn't independent. It didn't allow you to think. It didn't encourage you to think mm-hmm. in the same way that public radio news coverage does. And that's a huge part of what this station tries to do with its locally produced programs. Whether you look at, you know, our Saturday morning lineup with Ask Dr. Don and GeekSpeak, if you look at our Sunday lineup with the Seventh Avenue Project with Robert Pauly at noon, or the Agony Column with Rick Kleffel, you know, later on in the afternoon, all of these shows are about, you know, they're all aimed at thinking people. They're mm-hmm. all intended to, you know, make you want to go further.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, your own,
and
your
I,
own.
And it's under right. It's right in the middle of how the station runs, how a public radio station runs is kind of at the core. We give information and knowledge, and we're not trying to convince you of things. And that's a really fundamental difference. I think that people that do public radio understand right off the bat, right. But listeners might not necessarily understand. We don't do commercials, which means we don't say, go to this store. This store is awesome. You're going to have a great time. This product's amazing. You should do this. We're not trying to do sensationalism. We're not trying to convince you of things. We're trying to give information. And you can hear it. You know, Al, you of course listen to this show because we're doing it all the time, and I'm always doing these underwriting spots, and this, most people, those sound a little bit like commercials, but they're very different, and there'll be a key component. Let me go ahead and read one because I haven't yet, and I need to. Geekspeak on KOSP is supported by Palo Alto Medical Foundation, Santa Cruz, with local doctors in Aptos, Captola, Santa Cruz, Scotts Valley, Soquel, and Watsonville. Details on finding a personal doctor at thedoctorforyou.com. Now, you notice that, of course, I'm mentioning this company, which has donated money, and it is a part of our finances. But I didn't say go to this place. I didn't say that they're amazing, which, you know, they might be, they might not be. What I'm saying is they exist, they're supporting the station, and they're available for you and your community.
It's information. And you can find out more.
And you can find out more.
Right.
And that little detail means that we're letting you do the thinking on this, right? We're giving you the information, and we're letting you do the thinking.
Important, and you know, this is an important concept to understand. It's also important to understand how the budget basically works around here, because our business supporters, which are overwhelmingly local, mm-hmm. as these people are, account for about a third of all the money that comes in through the door at KUSP. Half of it, the largest piece, is from individuals like you, and it comes in through pledge drive campaigns like this one. Without that, none of the rest of this works. None of the economics of public radio work without listener support for the programs that they care about. I hope you care about GeekSpeak, you know, as much as I do, not, you know, as a listener and as a person who works at KUSP. I hope that's true. I hope this is valuable enough to you so that you'll stop right now and make a gift to help keep this show on the air and keep all of KUSP on the air. You can do that two ways. You can go online at KUSP's website, kusp.org, and make a gift right there. And this morning, you can phone up and make a gift at 1-888-777-1507. That's 1-888-777-1507. If you call now or you make a gift online now, your gift will be doubled by the Fabers up to that $500 limit. They support this program and this station, and we ask you to do the same.
Please do call 888-777-1507. Al, hi.
Yes.
Please tell me what's going on in cheap space. It sounds like a rental facility.
We've been talking about building the Enterprise, but even if you get that whole thing built, you really can't go anywhere in it.
Yeah,
you're still in Minecraft or wherever you are. How can you get to space? Assuming you're not like a millionaire.
Well, or can do astral projection.
Yeah, there's other ways you can get to space, that's not for this kind of show. There's a group that have done this, and this is an inexpensive way to actually get into space, not yourself, but see space. This group from Minneapolis, they call their project the Yavin 4, which is, I think, that's named after a rebel base in Star Wars.
Okay.
And what they did is they took an iPhone, and they took a droid, and they also took a flip video phone.
Yeah.
And they put these devices inside one of those little plastic Playmate coolers.
Yeah, okay.
And they cut holes and then sealed it with, you know, a plexiglass thing. And what they did was they got a weather balloon, and they set the iPhone, and they used a time-lapse app to take photos on a regular basis as it goes out for the time-lapse. They used a droid Eris running a program called Looped to track the landing, since where they did it was in Wisconsin, and Verizon's network covers almost all of Wisconsin where they thought the balloon might land. And the flip was turned on and set to record just before the payload was bundled and the balloon launched. So this flip went all the way up there. And this thing, the first time they did it, it went up and the balloon popped, and the thing was spinning around and just didn't really work very well. And they tried it again, and they actually got up into space, and we have video of, which we'll have on the site, of what the flip video phone took. And, I mean, they launched on during the day, and the thing went up there, and into space. This thing, they got it to stay up. They had to add some fins to it so that it would go up
and
there.
It wouldn't rotate too much.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
they, spinning,
you know,
sure.
But really, the cost was just very small.
I love that idea. Like, okay, let's get a weather balloon, which, of course, you can get
weather balloons. Yeah.
A cooler, some plexiglass and epoxy, and a few devices. Did they recover those devices?
Yes, because they used this tracking thing.
Probably from the iPhone.
Well, they used the tracking portion was from the droid.
Yeah,
it was running looped.
Sure.
And they were able to get everything back intact. And they had bought a couple of balloons, so that's why it's really not a big deal to do. You have to, you know, call the FAA and tell them you're going to launch a weather balloon, but it's surprisingly doable.
Yeah.
And they did it. I guess, I don't know, I think the edge of space is considered, they used to say 50 miles, but then I think now they're saying 100 kilometers, which is like 62 miles. So I think it's like 62 miles up.
It's not a line, right?
They show this thing, and they launch it during the day, and then the thing goes up, and then you're seeing like stars, and it's space,
right.
And
that's
it's
awesome.
Black, and they
that's
can
awesome.
See the Earth and all that kind of stuff.
Space on the cheap.
And the thing does blow up eventually.
the
balloon, they don't last. They don't just go up to the moon and keep going. And they pop. And then it falls back down. And then they were able to find it, and they show them finding it, and they lift it up.
And the videos are up.
And the videos are up, and we'll have those after the show, and you can check this out.
On geekspeak.org. I want to mention this week, kind of funny thing happened that Geekspeak, of course, has a Facebook page. If you go to geekspeak.org, and you can look at the videos from there, and also you can join the Facebook group if you join Facebook, right? I think we've got about 240 people on Facebook right now. And there are, you know, a lot of people I know. My account, my personal account, which I've always had this rule to say, if I've met someone and then they're on Facebook and they invite me or I invite them, then we can be joined, right? I'm on Facebook and be friends on Facebook as well. And I always kind of kept that rule because I didn't want it to explode into anybody that ever asks. Because some people just ask out of nowhere, right? So a while ago, some people started asking to join my Facebook group, and it was clear that they listened to GeekSpeak. I'd go to their page, and I was like, who is this person? I'd go to their page, and instead of it being the same high school as me and it was somebody I forgot, it was someone that's listening to GeekSpeak, and I can kind of tell from other media that they're interested in. So I've added a few people like that, but not a lot. I really try to keep that rule down clear that if I haven't met the person in person, they're not going to my Facebook account. But 2 days ago, my Facebook account hit 500 people. That's too many people.
Man.
I know them all, technically, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe four or five of them are people that listen to GeekSpeak, and that's good enough for me in some sense. But I've met all these people. Mm-hmm. Terry, are we friends on Facebook?
Well, let's go.
We are.
Let's go over all these people. Start naming them in alphabetical order.
There's Abra Abbo. And so the question becomes, how much is too much, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, in my daily life, I probably interact with about 40 or 50 people regularly, right, mm-hmm. that I'm friends with, if you will. Other people are people I know, or at one point I was friends with them. But where does the line go, and how do I decide to slim down? One of my friends said that he's down to 65, and that's where he wants to keep it maxed out. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. But do you let go of people that are family that you don't see very often? No, you got to have them, right? Colleagues, all the people at KOSP that do shows and stuff, I'm kind of fans of a lot of them, right? So mm-hmm. I want to be associated, find out what's going on with them because of their shows. So where's the line drawn?
Yeah.
What do you do?
I think I don't know what my number is at. It's not 500.
Well, because I'm so much more famous than you.
The thing is,
in a word, yes,
yeah, that's true. I think I read somewhere that like humans as a species can't really grok more than like 100 individuals in a group. Mm-hmm. You know, and like whenever you talk about you know, anything happening to like 2,000 people somewhere, somehow it doesn't have the same emotional impact as it would if you said something happened to like 100 or less. Because you can,
we associate individuals at that level.
And so I kind of try to keep that idea in my mind. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think I have like 300, but, you know.
I remember when I got to 300, I thought that's just too many people.
Yeah.
But now it's like, come on.
Yeah. I don't really know actually how I got there, who these people are, to tell you the truth. They're probably all like my high school friends who just want to keep up. And you know, sometimes there's people that I was friends with that I led into my thing and I don't hear from them ever. And then like after a year, they comment on something. I mean, they've been reading.
Right.
You know, they just,
that happens.
I like
well,
you've
got a
about.
Great Facebook feed, right? You got these cool videos of your kids sometimes.
Yeah.
Really cool mushroom pictures.
Mushrooms.
And interesting stories. I mean, you're a fun person to follow.
Yeah. So it's kind of neat. It's interesting. Oh, by the way, I was mentioning to you the other day that application I downloaded called Flipbook.
Yes.
That it's an iPhone app. And
you know what? This is the GeekBeak segment of the week. The Geek Bit.
This is the Geek Bit.
Yeah.
Essentially what it is it takes, it's an iPhone app that you download. It's called Flipbook. and it connects to your Facebook account, and then it redisplays the entire feed so that it looks like a magazine. So what you do is you kind of flip through pages of this magazine. It's for the iPad.
Yeah.
You flip through pages of the magazine, and it's like you're reading a magazine, and there's stories, and they have pull quotes, they have the pictures, they put them, it's nicely laid out, and it feels like you're reading a magazine that you just happen to know every single author.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. You know, it feels really neat, you know, because it's just way more appealing than this list view.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And what I've grokked is that with that many people, there's posts all the time. There's no way. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't spend enough time to read everybody's stuff. And it doesn't matter whether you like them or not. It's like there's just not enough time.
Yeah.
So that's part of it, of course. Let me just let you know that GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses, tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specialize in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. Hi, Terry.
Hello, Lyle.
I want to talk about local content.
Let's do that.
And I was just, you know, you listed them a second ago, and I want to see if I can do that same thing.
Yeah.
So we got GeekSpeak. I've heard of that one. And Ask Dr. Don, of course.
Which comes on right before.
Right before, and it's an amazing show. Mm-hmm. Talk of the Bay, which is on Sundays.
Sunday evenings.
And it's more about the Monterey Bay
Monterey Bay politics, Monterey Bay environment. Yeah.
Seventh Avenue Project with Robert Pauly. He's a friend of mine. Amazing radio production guy. He tapes great interviews. The thing about Robert that I love is that I've heard about this guest already nationally, and the guest happens to be local or something, or is in town. Robert's grabbed them, done an hour-long interview with them, and really gets in this great depth. Great interviewer. Right. That's Seventh Avenue Project. That's on Sunday as well.
And and also a really great website as well, 7thAvenueProject.org.
Yeah, very cool website. And then Agony Column with Rick Kleffel. Now, this is book reviews galore. Rick has – I think Rick knows every author that's ever existed, right? If you've been to his place – it's just he's got a garage. Like my garage space is always fill up with tools and geeky gear and like old SCSI adapters and stuff. Rick's garage is a bookstore in itself. It's amazing. Just bookshelf after bookshelf, you get lost in it. Just packed with books. And of course, he's read every one of them. And not only has he read every one, he can recall and tell you
exactly.
It.
He remembers all of them.
Yeah. And Rick's column. The thing is, when I hear about a famous author like you know Strauss or something, it was sci-fi. Yeah, I pay attention to fiction. Right. I mean science fiction stuff, right? If I hear about one of them, I know that Rick knows him, knows the personal email address, has talked to him, had him in the station, and communicate with him.
Right.
Rick's just a great production. And the Agony Column's on Sundays,
Sunday evening, 6 o'clock, right before Talk of the Bay.
We got good stuff on Sunday.
you're not kidding.
Then the Poetry Show, which of course is an amazing program. It's been around.
Right.
I think it's one of the longer running.
We think it's the longest continuously running weekly program about poetry on public radio at any station in the country.
That's pretty cool.
Which is pretty incredible.
Probably the world, but who knows? England's got some good
public
stuff.
Radio is hard to define outside
the
American context.
Life in the Fast Lane.
A feature 2 days a week.
Yeah, and Life of Fast Lane, Performing Arts, Visual Calendar, and Land Use Report. These are shorter segments that we put into the mix to kind of keep you connected with local content, and these are great, amazing programs. So all
and
of that
on top
stuff,
of that, on top of all of that, KUSP reports are growing local news pieces that also fit into Morning Edition and All Things Considered, which are just past its second anniversary in this
performing arts calendar
version,
weather, traffic, public service announcements. Mm-hmm. All this stuff is stuff we of course provide all the time, and I mention all that stuff because you can see that we're actually creating a lot of content right here.
Exactly.
And we're not even talking about all the stuff that comes from NPR.
Right.
So that gets created and is able to be produced because an amazing staff here at the station works feverishly hard to make the station run. That's, a major cost is the amount of people that are here making the station work. When I come in, of course, on Saturdays, most of the time Terry's here. so he's working a lot more than me. And the staff here is supportive and creative and helpful for all these volunteers that do all these radio programs. And without them, without the station working, we wouldn't be doing this content.
And that's the thing that distinguishes KUSP from most of what remains in public radio. I mean, this is an unfortunate, you know, from my perspective as a public radio kind of lifer, it is, you know, it is unfortunate that so many public radio stations have been forced to let go of local content. You know, the economics of the business are such that that stations can operate less expensively if they acquire their programming than if they make it. But making it has been at the core of KUSP's values since we started the thing up in 1972.
Yeah.
And it still is. And that, I think, is something worthy of public support.
Becoming a member to KUSP may be the easiest thing you've done all day. All you have to do is pick up the phone and make a call. The number is 888-777-1507. You'll talk to a friendly volunteer who will ask you a few easy questions, and then you're done. And it's about 2 minutes. And, you know, one of the people in the room is Rick Philman, who's been who's donating his time and energy to Geek Speak, I think, for like 6 years now. Really an amazing guy. You don't hear him on air, but he's one of the reasons why we're here every week doing Geek Speak. And he'll answer the phone right now if you give a call, 888-777-1507. Please do call, because, of course, your money is doubled right now by Sondra and Andrew Faber, up to $500. You could do that, of course, right now. Donate $500 and double your money, which how often can you do that? Rick Philman, of course, can answer the call. And then again, the phone numbers are 888-777-1507.
Can I do a few quick thank yous for people who have done just that? I'd like to thank Nicolette in Santa Cruz, Constance in Aptos, Mary in Santa Cruz, an anonymous donor in Santa Cruz, and Gail in Monterey, who says she's been listening for years, she's been contributing for years. We are grateful to all those people. We will be grateful to you when you call and give us your support for Geek Speak and for KUSP.
888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. Or, of course, you can go online at kusp.org. Now, of course, when they do that, Al, they'll be using their credit card most likely on the phone. Mm-hmm. It's the easiest way to do this. Mm-hmm. We have scheduling and all different ways of doing that, so you can have it deducted from your credit card once a month, so it's really painless. But can you tell me about like the newest tech in credit cards?
Yeah, I mean, credit cards are great, and they're a perfect way to transfer money, but what happens if your credit card falls out of your pocket or somebody...
Not good.
You know, I mean, you can do a lot of things with a lot of damage can be done with a found credit card. Well, there's a company, and I find this hard to believe, but the name of the company is Dynamics Inc. It just seems like a very generic name to me. Yeah. And I checked over it and looked all, yeah, no, that's their name. They must have somehow got it. I don't know what the deal is. But anyway, they're Dynamics Inc. And they've created a credit card that is actually a little mini computer. Now, it's the same size as a credit card. You're not going to pick it up and go, what's this thick thing? It's an actual paper, credit card size.
Thickness, right?
And it's somewhat flexible, you know, just like a credit card would be. But what it does is it has 5 buttons on it. All right, they're just sort of blister pack button things. Uh-huh. And you have to type in your personal PIN code to activate the card.
Okay.
Now, when the card becomes activated, you can see all the numbers on the card.
Oh, the credit card numbers.
And the magnetic stripe in the back becomes populated with your information.
Okay. Wait. So if you drop this card and you pick it up, what does it look like before you put the code?
It looks just like a regular credit card with a couple little blister
but
buttons.
No
numbers. It's actually a big section of the numbers are blanked out. Some of the numbers are normal because those identify the type of card, like MasterCard.
Right.
But then the personal identifying numbers are blanked out. And so if you drop the card, the thing times out after like 3 minutes. So if you were to pick this card up, it's just a worthless piece of plastic.
Right.
Unless you have that PIN number, you type the PIN number in, the numbers light up, you know, for 3 minutes.
Yeah. And the mag strip works.
And the magnetic strip gets populated with that data so you can swipe it.
That's darn smart.
I mean, that is a really cool credit card.
I agree.
I mean, that to me would be like, it'd almost be like, well, I lost my credit card. As long as, you know, I don't think somebody got it and used it within 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You're pretty safe. You can just order a new one.
Right.
You know, because that's the one thing about credit cards is that you have a lot of power in this one, you know, thing. It was great when they put people's pictures on there. But, you know, even that, I don't think a lot of people even do that. You know, most people just get the regular credit card and, you know, it's still, you know, thing, but this is essentially useless if it's lost. You know, so you just order a new one. You don't have to change your numbers.
It's very cool.
This is how things have to go. I mean,
I agree. Yeah, definitely. Know. So if you had all of your cards like this in your wallet, you lose your wallet, and you don't even have to make the phone call to cancel the cards. You just got, you know, you don't have to stress about it.
You just had to order new cards, or maybe the card would be even, well, it would have to be connected wirelessly, but you could just buy one at the store and then put your PIN number.
But you'd
have to have some way of connecting to some sort of database, which they don't do at this point. I guess the data is encrypted on the card, so you're able to...
That's really cool.
You know, I mean, I could see them doing licenses that way. So if they pull you over and you show your, and you don't know your PIN,
yeah,
you know.
That's pretty cool. I like it. Yeah, I like the idea of the
driver's license. I'll put the link up on the site after the show, and you can check this out. It's pretty neat.
All the stuff we do, and in a second, you're going to talk about matchmaking, high-tech style. All the things we do on GeekSpeak, we put up on the GeekSpeak.org website about a half an hour after the show. But it's all up there with lots of information, lots of feeds. And lately, we've had a big section of our website down. We've had it down because, of course, we're volunteers. And one of the things we try to do is make sure the radio program sounds good. And with the time that we do in the week, we develop the research. We come in here and do the show. Lots of times, Al does recordings of his crazy USB of the week, which has become a favorite here. But all that stuff takes time. So the website's kind of languished. I didn't restart some of the services. But it is restarted now, and you can go and ask us questions anytime you like by clicking on the Contact Us link and filling a little form. And, of course, there's little profiles of the geeks. And also up on our website is the Facebook button, if you will. And the reason I'm promoting that is I'd love to hear your opinions of how you use Facebook and stuff. And that's why I'm going to ask you to do it on Facebook. So if you're interested in that topic that I was talking about earlier about how many friends can you have, what should the rules be, what kind of defines that virtual environment of friends on Facebook, if you're interested in discussing that, we'd love you to go up on the Facebook page and post and talk about that on our on GeekSpeak/KUSP's GeekSpeak, KUSP, I think is the name of the page on Facebook. You can find it by going geekspeak.org. We are taking your calls with donations and with support of the station. We'd love to hear if you want to make a phone call today, you calling up and donating to the station, 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. And we still have money on the Sandra and Andrew Faber matching grant. So please do so now. And we'll talk about that a little bit. But first, I want to find out about matchmaking. What's going on?
Yeah. You know, we're all familiar with regular matchmaking. You know, I'm looking for a date and I go online. And I wasn't doing that at the time when all this stuff became popular. So, but I've seen a lot of
married.
Yeah, I was married. Sure. But, you know, it's like, it seems like the way to go. I mean, you can really just hone down exactly the type of person.
I've got friends that have met that way and are together still.
Yeah.
You know, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, don't think I would really want to meet somebody like me because they would irritate me. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure you can pick your criteria. Well, this service is basically, it's called Match Founders. It's UK-based. And what they do is they match people who are interested in starting companies. So it's really a matchmaking service for startup co-founders.
So instead of promoting yourself, you're kind of promoting your content?
You're getting together with other people that are interested in starting businesses, you know, and basically of like-minded. There's a certain type of entrepreneur that is a startup person. I mean, I deal with a lot of them.
So like this profile would be like, I like to support green technologies. I'm really interested in solar, but of course wind would be cool. Mm-hmm. And on the weekends, I like to take long walks in the beach. And therefore, I support any kind of research on wave and ocean.
I know.
So you have this whole ability to kind of promote what you want to support in that kind of fashion? Or is it written much more businesslike? I'm kind of guessing.
It's more businesslike. Right. I guess what they're calling it is Launch 48.
Okay.
So it's Match Founders aims to create a matched, this is what they say, matched introductions between passionate people with different skill sets, creating lasting and fruitful professional relationships.
Ooh, it sounds really cool. Yeah. So you can find out about that.
Yes, I've added this to the news section, and you can go there at matchfounders.com. You can go there, and if you're interested in starting a company, you know, or you have skills, I mean, it's a really great idea, I think.
Definitely.
Not everybody lives in Silicon Valley, where the next person at Starbucks is probably just like you. You know, if you're like in the Midwest, it's hard to find, you know.
Look, I have a long history with public radio. Doing GeekSpeak course, I've been doing for 10 years. But prior to that, I grew up at the station here at KUSP. My father was the development director for a while, and then the station manager had a weekly program called In the Green Room, which talked about performing arts. And so I grew up, and on Wednesdays, lots of times I'd play hooky from school. Actually, I did some homeschooling as well, and I'd come and sit in this room, though it looked a lot different then. It's been reshaped a bit, and he'd interview local artists about performing arts, and I'd sit here and maybe listen to vinyl or edit to reel-to-reel tape in the other room and kind of hang out the station and know the people. So I definitely have this unique experience with KUSP where it's much more like family than a place of work, and I think that's why I enjoy doing GeekSpeak so much. But about when the tech industry was booming and I became an adult, if you will, I moved back up to Santa Cruz and started listening to KUSP regularly. I don't think I was listening to it down there. I think we streamed at that point when I was away from Santa Cruz. But I started listening, and one of these pledge drives came up. And, of course, I listen to pledge drives just like everyone that does public radio. And half the time you're like, when's this going to be over? Because I want to get to the good content. And that's definitely a mindset that I had as a youngster. And then one day I decided, you know what? I'm making good money in the tech industry. I have a little bit of capital I can start doing. I'm going to go ahead and donate to the station. And it was my first time donating to the station at probably 20 or 24 or something like that. Afterwards, I had a completely new perspective on the station. I felt like I was helping guiding it. I was helping to create it to work. It felt like my, not like my property, but like my community that I committed to. It was a completely different experience. Even though I'd been at the station hundreds of times, I knew all the people that were involved. You know, I was personal friends with a lot of the people. The station was family already. Now, it had a completely different thing. I felt like a supporter of it. And I can't describe better than that how good it feels. But I can let you know that it's easy for you to have that feeling. All you have to do is call up and do it. And make it a small donation. I'm not saying the first time has to be this giant amount. But I got to say that a new member is essential to the stability of KUSP. People move away sometimes. When that happens, they don't contribute necessarily all the time, right? So there are reasons why people stop contributing. Death's one of them as well, I would assume. But because we have some people that at some point have to leave the station, that means it's essential for us to get new members. So I want you, as a new member, you've never donated to the station, right? You've listened to the station. You're listening to it now. Go ahead and give us a call. I'm talking to you.
The number to call is 1-888-777-1507. That's 1-888-777-1507. We've got about 12 minutes left of Geek Speak this morning. We've had support. We haven't had support at the level that one would believe, given the size of the audience. I mean, we measure, one of the things about KUSP is we use research to get some sense of how many people listen to different shows. That isn't how we decide what stays and what goes, but it's part of what we learn. And it sort of sets our expectations for different programs.
Mm-hmm.
Geek Speak happens to be now the most listened to, by these estimates, KUSP-produced program on the station.
That's pretty cool.
Period.
Pretty cool.
Full stop. We need the folks who value this show to step up and in proportion. This is the time. That's the phone number, 1-888-777-1507, or pledge online at kusp.org. A couple of people, three people who have given so far in this hour, Kirsten from Santa Cruz, big fan of Geek Speak and Car Talk that's coming up next, and Ask Dr. Don, which was on just before us, and Pegatha from Santa Cruz, who commented to our phone answer, she's not into computers, but she likes the way the geeks talk.
That's a very common thing for us.
And an online pledge from an anonymous donor in Santa Cruz. All of these people are doing their part to help. If we all do our part to help, these kinds of public media creatures will continue and they'll prosper, and things like Geek Speak will continue to be created. There's an entrepreneurial thing to being a programming volunteer at KUSP. It's the same kind of imagination and dedication that lets you start up a business, lets you start up a radio show. I want that to be something that continues in Santa Cruz and the Monterey Bay area forever. Yeah. I don't ever want that to go away. And the way it won't go away is if we as a community keep supporting it.
What
simple
if,
as that.
What if people are listening to this on a podcast? Because we have a huge podcast. I mean, it seems like whenever I talk to people who listen to Geek Speak, right, they say, yeah, well, I listen to the podcast.
Right,
you know,
right.
I don't really listen to you at 10 o'clock Saturday morning in Santa Cruz. You know, I'm in Kentucky.
This was actually the very first KUSP show that, again, according to that measurement that we do, where the people who listen through different media exceeded the number of people who say that they listen, you know,
which
live over the air.
Which makes sense because, right. I mean, our
this
listeners
ought to be the pioneering show,
I mean,
that way.
They may not be computer experts, but they're into, you know, new technologies.
They're frustrated enough with their computer because something didn't work. So
yeah.
We know they're using their computer.
Right. So it's like they have them. And, right, and so if I'm listening to a podcast, and well, somebody might be listening right now to a podcast. They're hiking or whatever.
One thinks they are, yeah.
How would they donate? Can they donate somehow?
Make a gift online anywhere, anytime that you're connected at kusp.org. It's kusp.org, two clicks, and you're there.
You can even make comments about your pledge and stuff, and please feel free to do that.
Right.
We'd love to get donations. We normally don't talk a lot to our podcast listeners, but now that our numbers are so high in podcasting, it's really clear that this, of course, is a locally produced show. It's about the Santa Cruz area, but we Monterey, Central Coast, California, and we definitely talk about those kind of things. But we also try to make it international because we have listeners all over the place, and you know that you're a listener all over the place. If you're not in the Central Coast of California, you're still listening to GeekSpeak. Please do feel free to give us a call during this week, but the website, of course, a lot easier.
And I should add that if you make a pledge any time during the pledge drive, and in fact up to October 11th, because obviously, you know, there's a lot of time shifting going on with our archived and our podcast. So if you make a gift between now and October 11th, or if you just choose to enter, no gift is required, we have a contest that we're doing during this fall campaign. You can read about it on the website at KUSP.org. The grand prize is a two-night stay at the Post Ranch Inn in Big Sur, which is one of the deluxe accommodations anywhere on the Pacific Coast. It is, in terms of value, the most valuable thing we have ever given away at this radio station. It is a fabulous resort. They are great supporters of KUSP. In fact, our Big Sur translator is located on a different part of the Post Ranch from the Post Ranch. So they're very loyal supporters of KUSP. They donated this package to us to give away to one lucky contributor during this campaign. And you can enter online up through October midnight, 12:01 a.m. Pacific time on October the 11th.
And listen, if a podcasting listener from somewhere else in the world wins this, and you do come out to California, Geeks will come out and have dinner with you, and you can meet us, and that'd be a blast. I'd love to go down to Big Sur.
And this place is worth the trip from wherever you are listening to this program. It's worth the trip.
Definitely. All right, the phone number is 888-777-1507. Again, that's 1-888-777-1507. Of course, the website is KUSP.org. And of course, KUSP links to Geekspeak.org, and Geekspeak.org links back to KUSP. So visit one of them if you remember the URL and you can get to the other, no problem. All right, Al, it's been a while. Mm-hmm. I need the fix. I need the weekly robot fix. Can you please help me out with...
Okay, well, I've got a really just a horrible, horrible idea.
Like so many robot stories.
Yes. Many of them are just disastrous, and it's just a horrible idea. Well, this particular one is done. It's a robot that was created by Peter Kormashev and his colleagues at the Italian Institute of Technology's Advanced Robots. I imagine the translation of that is something different in Italian. But anyhow, this Italian robotic group has created a humanoid robotic baby that has taught itself to shoot a bow and arrow.
Oh, dear.
So now they have this thing that, and what's even worse, and it in eight tries, it was able to hit the center of the target. It figured out.
So it never touched a bow before?
Well, I imagine they programmed it to say this is a bow and this is how it works and all that kind of stuff. So, and then there's a video, which I also am posting on geekspeak.org, that you watch this thing and it takes the bow and arrow and it tries it and it shoots it. It's like shooting a little suction cup thing, but, you know, I mean, obviously.
Yeah,
how long before that thing is a poison arrow, you know? Anyhow, so the
with
thing...
toxic nanobots.
Yeah, with toxic nanobots. It turns it into, duplicates itself. So it's 11.5 feet away, and in eight tries, it finally hit the bullseye. Now,
if you've picked up a bow and tried to hit,
you know, if you've ever picked up a bow and arrow and tried to hit something with it, I mean, just to be able to get the thing to shoot, it takes you eight tries.
And it can make spaghetti. Man, this thing's amazing.
I don't know about this. This is just another disastrous, horrible idea in robotics.
Don't you just, when you read the story and you're like, and you start reading the names of the people that are involved with it, you're like, does that sound like an infamous person yet? You know, because when the roams of small arrow-shooting babies hit the screen.
Right. And robotic babies.
You know, this guy Peter from Italy is going to be just hated by everyone.
Yeah. It was in that day when it did it in eight tries, we knew something was wrong. You know, it's like the beginning of a movie or something, and this is real.
The scientists did all their efforts to put suction cups on the end, unfortunately.
Yeah. Soon the robots realized they could put other things on the ends. You know, it's like, man, you know. And look what they did to the robot
this is a
picture of it.
Oh, no, they gave it a... Oh, God.
It's got like a Native American headdress.
It's just insulting on so many levels.
I know. It's
not even human.
They're in Italy, you know. Put a beret on them or something. Don't make them seem like
he came
from here.
I guess if you created the robot in the United States, it'd be a Native American.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know.
Anyway, it's bad.
Yes.
I don't think that you should train
robots.
No
more of these. Don't make them so that they can eat people or shoot people.
Eating people and killing things.
All that kind of stuff.
Weapons?
We don't need it, you know.
No, we really don't. Well, thanks for keeping us abreast of the robot, the pending future robot overlords. Mm-hmm. Of course, if Miles was here, he would say, I, for one, welcome our robot archery shooting.
Yeah.
Overlords.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I know I'm putting a lot of energy onto you today, Al. Mm-hmm. And the second you're new Crazy USB of the Week. Do you want to hit one more story that you've got lined up for us today?
Well, what would you like to hear about?
Well, I do like robots.
Well, there's the mind control robot, which is basically...
Which direction does it go?
it's you controlling a robot with your mind.
Okay, phew.
this one is, I found it on Extreme Tech. It's called the Emotive Epoch. And really, the robot part of it is the interface of your brain. So you get this thing that you hook onto your head.
I've worn one of these.
Emotive Epoch headset. And it is somehow it picks up EEG things in your brain. And you're able to, I haven't worn one of these, but you're able to make it do things. And then this interface is in. And people have started doing this with, I guess you can connect it so that it works over Skype and it will control a robot and let you
remotely.
So you're basically controlling a robot in another part of the country via Skype using this headset and your brain waves.
Okay, so you've got your at the house, you've got a robot that's been that hangs out at your house, and you get notified that someone's at the door, mm-hmm. and so you mind control the robot to shoot them with a bow and arrow. That's the basic synopsis
or
of today's
vacuum
robot
the carpet.
Or vacuum the carpet.
But you know, the funny thing is, you look at this and you go, oh, this is like, whoa, big deal. That's like super human, you know, futuristic, Tom Cruise. No, this is like very cheap. This is like under $300 to get one of these things.
That's amazing.
And so, I mean, the technology
now,
is
I've worn one of these because one of the students in the program that I work for at UCSC, the Digital Arts New Media program, one of his pieces is going to be controlled by brain control. Hmm. And we tried training this thing, and you kind of have to get your brain in the right state. And overthinking about the issue is not the way to do it. Huh. I didn't do very well.
Yeah.
I did fine if I looked away from the screen and I thought of like a real neutral space, like my body floating in a pool of water, and then thought of up, I could get something to move up. But if I looked at the screen, any kind of feedback, I'm like analyzing the statistics of it, and I'm looking at it, getting mixed
it's
all up.
It's weird to think that
you still
control
your brain.
You can control something just by thinking about it.
Terry, real fast.
2 minutes left in Geek Speak. Still time to call. Still money to match with Sandra and Andrew Faber. Quick thanks to Chris and Betty from Santa Cruz, to Susanna from Santa Cruz, and John from Monterey, all of whom have responded in the last few minutes. There's still time. There's still money to match your money.
And we're really asking what you can donate. What is KUSP worth to you? That's what we want you to donate. And I'm talking to you, Mike and Soquel and George and Fremont and Allison and Felton. See, that doesn't work. So I can't really list everybody, but I can say that if you're hearing my voice, we're talking to you. Please contribute. The phone number, again, is 1-888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. Al, Crazy USB of the Week, abridged.
Well, it's the USB Peppermouth, and this thing is designed by an anarchic designer, Oziki Kumajulu. And he's at the Ultra Modern Life Training Lab. And basically what it does is when you type a word that's a foul word anytime during your computer, this USB device plugs into it and it emits a foul odor.
So it makes your foul language foul odors.
Yeah, any kind of word that is unacceptable, this thing will detect it and then emit an odor. And this is a real thing, just like all of these USB things. And
it doesn't sound useless, but it is.
It's a pretty much useless thing, and it makes it probably smell really bad if you have a foul mouth.
And learn more about that at
geekspeak.org.
Geekspeak on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Geekspeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and we appreciate their support. This is Central Coast Public Radio KUSP. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org.